Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Family decided to call him as a missing person. Because the family lives in the county, so it went to us. In Oregon, it's not like some places where there's, you know, they have to be gone for a certain amount of time. It just depends on the circumstances, and, you know, because family, you're going to know your family member better than any cop that just got a call. So if something's out of the ordinary, you're going to know it. And so there's no requirement as far as waiting a certain amount of time, or there has to be certain circumstances or anything like that. I'm 90% sure I know what occurred, where it occurred, who was involved. It's the why that's the factor. You know, why did it happen?
On Friday, March 16th, 2018, 25-year-old Max Greenfield started out his weekend at a local casino, where he had a drink with his sister Tanya, and the two made plans to go see a movie later in the weekend. They left together and headed home to Brookings, Oregon, where Tanya dropped Max off at home. The next evening, late in the night of March 17th, and into the early morning hours of March 18th, Max was back at the casino hanging out with some friends, when he was asked to leave for not having proper identification. Max was seen on surveillance speaking to a man outside the casino. The pair walked off the property and the man returned alone about 15 minutes later. This is when Max disappeared and he has not been seen or heard from since. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 204 of The Vanished, Max Greenfield's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Max Greenfield grew up in a fairly small area in southern Oregon, just north of the border with California, in a town named Brookings. Brookings is a small town with a community where everyone knows everyone. The area is known for drawing fishermen to their thriving fishing spots and its prominent lumber business. But Max often felt like he didn't fit in this quiet, small town. And he had big dreams of leaving the rural community behind and becoming an artist in one of California's larger metropolitan areas, or possibly even New York. For this story, we spoke with Max's sister, Tanya, and she shared who Max was as a person and what he strived for as an adult.
We're 12 years apart. We both grew up as only children, pretty much. He was with me a lot. He was fun. He was cute. He's pretty strong-willed. He's not aggressive, but he was pretty set in his ways, but he would never, like, pick a fight. He was pretty soft-spoken most of the time. He wanted things done his way. And he didn't like rules a lot. That was a problem. I mean, Max, you know, he was 25. He grew up pretty much in Brookings, Oregon. He left school when he was young and went to college at 16 or 17, I think, down in Southern California. And then he did that for a couple years at different schools, and he ended up in New York. I'm pretty sure that's like when, like, the art and drug scene came into play. And he ended up back here. I mean, he ended up in Portland. He traveled. He liked to wander. Like, he couldn't quite figure out where he wanted to be or what he wanted to do. He went to school for graphic design, but didn't complete it. That was pretty much what he wanted to do. He wanted to fleet around the world and have fun. It got to a point where it was like he didn't really have like a dream job. He just wanted to be somehow independently wealthy. Like, he didn't want kids. He kind of wanted to meet somebody, but somebody who was absolutely gorgeous and intelligent and kept him occupied at all times, but not too occupied to where he felt smothered. You know, he'd gone to college when he was younger, and when he came back after rehab and stuff, and over the course of time, I told him I would help him go back to school if he wanted to take a class, but he physically had to go to the community college and do it. I wasn't going to pay for online stuff. He had to get out of the house, and he wouldn't go. I think that's where a big part of it, the problem was, it was like he didn't really have anything beyond what was happening now. I mean, he was happy when he was young, but then it was just depressed. He wanted out of Brookings. He was homeless in San Francisco for a little bit after his dad kicked him out because he overdosed, but it never lasted long. He would call, and then he ended up back in Brookings about 6 years ago.
After having seen some of what the big cities had to offer and the differences between a quiet town and the fast pace and excitement of urban areas, Max still didn't want to live the rest of his life in a small town in Oregon. Even though he was with his family again, Max wasn't happy back at home for long. Tanya explained why.
He absolutely hated living here, but when he would get kind of clean, he didn't really have, he never really took care of himself properly on his own. He couldn't really make it for very long away from home. And then he had severe anxiety, and he would quit his job, get depressed because his life was going nowhere, and then he didn't know what to do with himself, and he was suicidal. He felt like nobody really accepted him. He was also gay, and it's a really small community that doesn't go real well. I mean, he knows that, like, me and mom don't care. That was a non-issue. Like, my mom's side of the family is a non-issue. But primarily, he just wanted to travel. He wanted to go see everything. At one point, he was in school for graphic design, and he was doing really well. But then when the drugs started, it's like everything became just the drugs. And he was horrendously depressed, and he wanted out of Brookings. And I was like, well, like, do you want to get married at some point? You know, do you want to find a relationship? And he wasn't interested in a long-term relationship. He believes there was always something better.
Tanya knew that these issues pointed to something bigger going on. Max and Tanya, while close, are 12 years apart and didn't get the chance to grow up together. Max had a rocky relationship with his dad and didn't spend much time with him, especially after telling his father that he was gay, a conversation that his father did not respond to very kindly. Max's father has since passed away. We don't know the exact cause or when it first occurred, but at some point during his adolescence, Max had started experimenting with drugs, which ultimately escalated to heroin as his drug of choice. He was self-medicating for a number of undiagnosed mental health issues, and he felt uncomfortable as a gay man living in a traditional, tightly knit community of no more than about 7,000 people in his hometown of Brookings. By 2013, Max had gone to a mental health facility, and in 2017 was placed in a detox center. Tanya told us that while he was in college after he went to detox, Max stayed clean for some time.
He didn't really go to rehab. He ended up in the mental hospital a couple times, and we tried to get him into rehab. He went to a detox center in, I guess it was 2017, but he wouldn't stay in. We couldn't get him into residential because they didn't have an opening. When he was in college, I think there were chunks of time, but he was young. So it was a battle. Depression, anxiety, drug abuse. I mean, he had antidepressants, he had sleeping pills, anxiety pills, the Suboxone.
After his stay in a detox center, Max moved back home with his mom. He was taking the appropriate medications prescribed by his doctors. and pursuing the healthy way to treat his medical conditions. Every morning, his mom would lay out his medications and lock the rest away. By the time he disappeared, however, Max's family believed that he was back using heroin and hanging out with a crowd of people who were deeply involved in the dark world of drug abuse. Max enjoyed an especially close relationship with his sister Tanya. Even though Tanya had married and was no longer living at home, she still made an effort to meet up with Max and spend some time together on a regular basis. As the weekend began, on Friday, March 16th, 2018, Tanya and her ex-husband met Max at the Lucky Seven Casino in Smith River, California. Tanya and Max lived in Oregon, but visiting the casino was just a short trip across the state line. Tanya told us about that night.
So, I got off work, I don't know, 4 or 5, whatever, and we were going to take him to the movies. We live in Brookings. Max lived in Brookings, but we were going to go down to Crescent City, California, to see the movie. And he told me he was at the casino at Lucky Seven in Smith River, which is in between Brookings and Crescent City. So we stopped by there, and it was probably, I don't know, maybe 6-ish. And he didn't want to go. He wasn't hungry. He wanted to know if I'd give him a little bit of money and go have a beer with him. So we did. And then he wanted to know if when we got back, we'd get him, pick him up and take him back to my mom's. And so I did. We picked him up probably maybe 10 p.m. that night on the 16th from Lucky Seven and took him back to my mom's house. It wasn't that late, 10:30 maybe. And then Max said that we would go to the movies on Sunday.
The next day, Saturday, March 17th, was unremarkable. Max's mother went to work, and Max stayed home all day, at least to our knowledge. His mother came home from work, laid Max's medications out for Sunday morning, and around 10 p.m. told Max goodnight. She saw him and he responded to her, and that's how we know that he was home that evening. After his mom went to bed, Max started asking around for a ride to the casino. Here's Tanya on that.
He was at my mom's. She went to bed. He was there. She gets up. I mean, he was there when she went to bed, and that couldn't have been 9, 10 o'clock p.m. on Saturday. She goes to bed. He's there. Then he starts messaging people on Messenger, on Facebook Messenger, wanting to be picked up and taken to the casino. She wakes up. She assumes he's still in bed, leaves his pills, and goes to work.
Max continued looking for a ride and asked some of his friends to come get him. One eventually agreed, and Max headed off to the Lucky Seven Casino in Smith River, a place he often frequented.
He messaged Shannon. He messaged some girl named Courtney. He messaged Maritza. All of these people trying to get them to take him, to come pick him up. And Shannon finally picked him up, Shannon and Jay. But he was supposed to go meet Maritza later that night. That's where supposedly he was heading. Because Maritza sent me the messages between back and forth between them. He was messaging her outside the casino saying, hey, I'm coming, you know, where are you, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so they go into the casino, but they were in there for a couple hours. So I guess Max was in the casino at like 11:42. p.m. The casino cart ended up asking Max for his ID. He doesn't have it. They kick him out. I'm assuming he didn't have any money. He was with other known drug people. If you're not spending money, they start watching you and find a reason to kick you out. So they kick him out. He doesn't drive. So now he's stuck there with nowhere to go. But like the casino has a bunch of footage of when they kicked him out because they were watching him. So there's like probably, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of them following him with the camera as he walked around the parking lot. And he was obviously waiting for somebody. The guy comes out and it's like they just watched it. They watched him for a long time outside. I mean, probably a good 15 minutes back and forth.
After Max was asked to leave the casino for not having proper identification, the surveillance cameras outside stayed on, pointed at Max, seemingly because the casino staff wanted to make sure that there was no problem and that Max did leave the property. However, Max didn't immediately leave. He stood outside, talking on the phone and looking around as if he was waiting for someone. At approximately 1:50 a.m. Sunday morning, about an hour after Max had been asked to leave, the cameras, still rolling, start recording an interaction that is crucial in Max's story, covering the last 3 minutes before Max disappeared. While Max stands outside, another man comes onto the surveillance tape where Max is standing. The man is wearing what appears to be a leather jacket, with a beverage in hand. This man and Max speak for a few seconds, and during this time, the camera zooms in on a duffel bag that Max is holding in his left arm. There appears to be something on top of the bag that looks like a 2-liter bottle of soda. In his right hand, Max holds what appears to be a cell phone. As they speak, they turn toward the parking lot and begin walking away from the casino, heading southwest toward Highway 101. Max follows the other man's lead, and the surveillance cameras change to different views as the men continue to walk away from the casino property. For a moment, it appears that the casino staff have lost track of the two, but they quickly reappear, continuing to walk toward the highway. Throughout their walk to the edge of the property, the other man looks back a few times, but it's unknown what he is looking at. At almost 3 minutes into the surveillance tape, they exit the parking lot and fade into the night. Approximately 15 to 20 minutes later, the other man, known as Jason Ledford, comes back to the casino alone, and Max has never been seen again.
When the man came out, they left, and that was that. He's in his early 50s. I knew instantly who he was. I messaged him and he lied to me. And he told me I didn't know what I was talking about. And he hadn't seen Max, which we gave the police those messages because I messaged him before the surveillance video came back. When the police questioned him, his story changed. Once they had the surveillance, at first he said he didn't know anything about Max. You know, he knew who he was, but they weren't friends. First time he denied really seeing Max at all that night. And so he denies seeing Max. And then once the video surveillance came back, then he changed his story a little bit and said, oh, he did see him, but you know, he was going to walk Max somewhere and Max wanted to go one way and he knew it was the wrong way. So he went back to the casino. His story's changed a little bit each time. I mean, I think he's been questioned 3 or 4 times now. At one point he said he was too scared to talk.
The police identified Jason Ledford fairly quickly in the investigation into Max's disappearance. They sat down to talk with him, and at first, Jason denied that he was with Max. However, once presented with the surveillance tape, Jason admitted that he was the other person on the video. We asked Tanya to describe what happened when Jason returned alone.
Jason comes out, they talk for a minute, and they start to walk away. And then Max is never seen again. Jason comes back to the casino and sits in the hallway looking like he's freaking out for an hour. I mean, he goes back and forth from he doesn't know anything to they're going to kill him if he says anything to, you know, it's just all over the place. But the they're going to kill him is a pretty standard thing because somebody else told me the same thing.
We did attempt to speak with Jason once he was identified as the other person on the casino surveillance tape. We sent him a message on social media asking if he'd be willing to talk with us. This was his response. I've been through hell because of this. I'm not interested in people seeing my face anymore. They think I had something to do with Max disappearing, and I had nothing to do with it at all. Jason wasn't willing to talk with us, but he was at least one person for the police to consider. So Tanya started looking for more clues on the surveillance video. She's unsure that Max was wearing his own clothing. Furthermore, as they're walking away from the casino, Max can be seen carrying a duffel bag. It made me wonder if he was considering leaving that night. So we asked Tanya about this, and she explained why she believes that Max was carrying art supplies.
It's bizarre. It also doesn't look like Max was wearing his clothes. His clothes are too big. His pants were falling off. They were like men's slacks because when me and my mom, we sat down at the police station and we watched this video, the whole thing of them at the casino. And I'm like, whose pants is he wearing? You know, Max is skinny. And these pants were like a larger man's slacks. And that was very odd because he wears skinny jeans. I mean, and so it was very odd. We have no idea. I mean, he likes to go to thrift stores, so he does end up with weird things. But the pants situation was really odd. And I don't know, the girl he was supposed to meet up with, they would paint together. He painted a lot, and probably his art supplies.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Saturday night came and went, and no one in Max's family noticed anything amiss. The next morning, on Sunday, March 18th, when Tanya hadn't heard from Max about their plans to go see a movie, Tanya thought he'd forgotten or was still asleep. And then their mother came home from work and found it odd that Max hadn't taken his medication, and it didn't appear that he had made it home. So she called Tanya and asked if Max was with her, or if she had seen or heard from him. But Tanya hadn't seen Max either, and now they were both concerned. We asked Tanya to walk us through what happened next.
He said he would come with me on Sunday, and that was March 18th. And he didn't answer his phone. So I was kind of irritated, but it's what he does. And then when my mom got off work, she noticed he was on a lot of prescriptions, and she would leave his pills out for him at night. And when she got home from work at 4 o'clock on Sunday, his pills were still there and she had left them out the night before. And so she called me and she's like, well, his pills are here. And I said, well, I was supposed to take him to the movies. And we kind of figured maybe he probably left in the middle of the night and was with his friend. And then he didn't come back for the pills and he didn't answer his phone. And it's like, we started by like late Monday or Tuesday, we knew there was a problem. So I put it on Facebook that we're looking for him and we were going to file a missing persons report. And one of his friends said he was at the casino and that he was supposed to meet with her and he never showed up late Saturday night. And that was the last anyone had contact with him. My mom called the police on the 20th, which I believe was the Tuesday, and filed a police report. So, and they didn't really take it seriously because you end up with a 25-year-old with a known drug history who's missing for 2 days. And they're like, okay, well, he just ran off.
Filing a missing persons report on Max was not an easy task. because even though he lived in Oregon, he was last seen in California. They went to their local police station, and the police filed an initial missing persons report, intending to follow up with Del Norte County, just over the border in California. Though Max's mother and Tanya were afraid that the police might not take Max's case seriously, they filed the report and left wondering what to do next. Tanya started to dig through Max's messages, and the police in California obtained a copy of that surveillance footage from the casino, where Max was last seen. Soon, the police in both counties started to realize that Max didn't just take off on his own.
The Oregon detective, once they realized he was at the casino, because I was getting copies of text messages from people saying he was at the casino, they got the surveillance, and that probably took, I want to say, right around about a week. So when that came back, they started taking it seriously because it showed him walking off out of the casino with Ledford. But then California wasn't involved yet because, again, we have a 25-year-old drug addict who now has a duffel bag and walked away from the casino. And it took a lot for us to convince them that he didn't just leave. I mean, we know him. He wasn't very self-sufficient. I mean, he didn't have a job or anything. So it's like if my mom wouldn't go pick him up, he would call me to go pick him up. To go pick him up, to send him money, to, you know, he didn't drive. He didn't have a job. So then California got on board. And then we got into, it was like, okay, so they're actively looking for him. They sent search and rescue out. Me and my mom, a few of our friends, searched for 3 days in the ditches up and down the shoreline. And there's this area in Smith River that we figured, you know, messages started coming in because it was all over Facebook that we were pretty sure something happened at a house. But it's like, we didn't find him, and the dogs didn't find him. I mean, they've taken the dogs out over a dozen times, and a lot within that first month, California did. And then it turned into, it was pretty much California's jurisdiction because it seemed like everything was happening here. After the surveillance, well, they questioned him before the surveillance videos came back. He denied everything. So within the first week, they talked to him. And then they questioned him again after he was actually physically seen leaving with him. Because it's like, well, why would you lie? The girl he was supposed to meet said Max and Jason were coming to her house. Max and Jason were definitely going to walk over to the girl's house. And supposedly, Ledford had heroin and speed on him. I have messages where he said he had both.
This story is a bit of a jurisdictional anomaly, because two counties from two different states had to work together to put different pieces of the puzzle together in order to investigate what happened to Max. When Max's sister and mother initially filed the original police report, they filed it where they live in Curry County, Oregon. We were able to speak with Detective Jared Freeman, who works for the Curry County Sheriff's Office and continues to work on Max's case.
So my name is Jared Freeman. I'm a detective with the Curry County Sheriff's Office in Southern Oregon on the coast. I've been in law enforcement since 2002. That's just something that I've always wanted to do since I was a kid. So everything that I've done in life as far as education or military or anything like that has always been kind of just pointed towards eventually going into law enforcement. So as soon as I was able to do that, that's what I did. And here I am.
Detective Freeman isn't the original detective assigned to Max's case, but he has since taken over from a retired detective who was working on it. We asked Detective Freeman to walk us through the challenges that come with working on a case that involves two states and two separate counties.
We're the last town right before you hit California, and then there's Smith River, California, where the reservation is where he disappeared from, which is, I think, 6 miles south of us. Yeah, we're right on the border. So Brookings City Police, they have their own agency. So the county handles all unincorporated areas. And the southernmost little city here is called Harbor, Oregon. And that's in our jurisdiction. And that's where the Greenfield family lives. Might as well be the same city because the casino is a major draw. There's a lot of activity that goes on down there. And there's plenty of great people down there, but the criminal element is a tight knit couple folks. So with our area in Smith River and Crescent City, it's interchangeable in and out of there. Pelican Bay State Prison is up here in Crescent City, so there's a lot of inmate families that move up to be near their incarcerated members of their family. And then we have a large group of transients. It's just in and out, constant rotation of people. When we can work together, we do. I'm down there pretty frequently because somebody that's involved in a case up here will be in jail down there or vice versa. So because of the fact we're on a border town, we have a mutual aid agreement. Luckily, our sheriffs, you know, are pretty close together. They're like-minded and they're willing to help each other out. So we don't have that issue.
Detective Freeman wanted to stress that although Max didn't have a criminal record, he had spent a lot of time with people who were known to law enforcement on both sides of the Oregon-California line. This is what he told us.
He was by no means, I mean, he wasn't like a big-time criminal or anything like that. We just had some minor interactions with him. I know that he was involved in drugs, but I don't believe that he was arrested for anything like that. He was just kind of, we were aware of him because of who he was around.
In Max's case, we were curious to know how both Curry County, Oregon, and Del Norte County, California started working on this case. Detective Freeman walked us through the timeline from the first day Max's mom and sister realized that he was missing.
So he had been living with his mother, if I'm correct, and then she set out some medication for him to take or something and then noticed he hadn't taken it. And then a couple days later, he still hadn't returned home. Nobody had heard from him. He used to communicate with him over Facebook, which requires a Wi-Fi connection for his cell phone. And apparently he hadn't been active on Facebook for a certain amount of time. So the family decided to call him in as a missing person. Because the family lives in the county, so it went to us. In Oregon, it's not like some places where there's, you know, they have to be gone for a certain amount of time. It just depends on the circumstances. And, you know, because family, you're going to know your family member better than any cop that just got a call. So, you know, if something's out of the ordinary, you're going to know it. And so there's no requirement as far as waiting a certain amount of time or there has to be certain circumstances or anything like that. Generally, these are resolved fairly quickly. We find somebody and find out they're okay, and then it doesn't even get to a point to where they're entered into LEDS or NCIC is missing. So generally, the missing report is filed. We'll do our due diligence as far as trying to locate them and resolve it as quickly as possible. They'll be entered if we can't locate them easily like that. If it's not, they're just at their friend's house or they stopped off at the bar or whatever. They'll be entered into LEDS as missing and endangered. Usually, at that point, you know, we'll send out a teletype for the coastal agencies as well as the agencies over along the I-5 corridor. If they come into contact with this person or vehicle, check their welfare, give us a call back, let us know how it went out. If a family member articulates that they're either a danger to themselves or other people, or they have a past history of, you know, doing reckless things, based on either their mental state or sometimes, like there was one that was a type 2 diabetic and needed his insulin and left it at home. So those kind of things are all going to go into play. We work pretty closely with the casino in Del Norte County. And the casino is really the only 24-hour operating business down here. So if someone takes off in the middle of the night, there's a couple places they can go. They can go to Walmart in Crescent City or they can go to the casino. But nothing else is open. It's a small fishing community. You know, I like to say they roll the sidewalks up at 9 o'clock, but there's really nothing local that he could be out doing unless he's either at a friend's house or, like I said, go to the only 24-hour business, which is the casino down there. So I think they just kind of were checking boxes and said, hey, let's go see if he's gone down to the casino.
One of the questions that we always ask law enforcement when we have the opportunity to speak with them is whether or not there are any signs that point to the missing person's disappearance being voluntary or involuntary. Here's Detective Freeman again.
That it was involuntary? Yeah, just as far as his relationship with his family, they're pretty tight-knit. Him and his sister Tanya were really close. Him and his mother were really close. And then the scuttlebutt, you know, in the criminal community is that it was not voluntary.
Detective Freeman freely shares that he hadn't been assigned to Max's case from the start, but was willing to tell us what his most important strategy has been in looking for Max, and what he continues to do today.
So, yeah, my involvement in this has been after the fact, pretty much. So the other detective that initially took the case retired. I've replaced him. And basically what I've been doing is just, like, keep poking the bear anytime I come across any of the involved parties or people that we suspect are involved. I'll just interrogate them or interview them, not interrogate them, but I'll try to keep them fuzzed up a little bit, because you want the pressure to be on. That way somebody will make a mistake. And it's one of those things where that's what we're waiting for, is somebody's going to flip or somebody's going to say something, and we're going to be able to capitalize on it. The other thing is, you know, with this case in particular, everybody that we know is involved is addicted to some substance. And unfortunately that, you know, those substances will, I like to say they eat your soul. So we're going to have to wait for somebody to sit in jail for long enough to get clean, and then their conscience will catch up to them or whatever, and they'll give us some information. The missing person portion of it is, we know where he went from here, so my hands are tied as far as things that happened in California. He went missing from his mom's house, and he was tracked out of our jurisdiction. So then once he went and we determined that he was alive at the casino, he's now missing from the casino instead of missing from our area. That's where Delmar County has to pick the ball up, and that's where they started everything off. And I know that they've done a lot. They've executed multiple warrants and had cadaver dogs out and all kinds of different things. But basically what I'm doing, like I said, is I'm just trying to keep the pressure up on these people, because they are interchangeable. They're in and out of here just like everybody else. They're all involved in the same circle. And so anytime I can, I put pressure on them. Just hoping that they'll mess up, and either that or I'll get somebody on the right day when they feel like they, you know, need to clear their conscience.
While researching the story and learning about Max and his life, we found out that Max had an addiction to heroin that he had tried to combat several times. However, Max isn't alone. Opiate addiction is an epidemic that has affected people from all walks of life across this country. We talked with Detective Freeman about what he's witnessed in his time as a law enforcement officer working with those who struggle with drug addiction.
When I first started in Oregon, it was not a big deal, and it was all pills. You never saw heroin because it was all pills. People always had oxycodones or oxycontins or Percocet or whatever. And then once that dried up, there was a lot of burglaries and thefts, people stealing the pills, or fraudulently writing prescriptions for themselves, things like that. And then this wave of heroin came in, and that stopped. And now it's just heroin everywhere. We have two main arterials that run up the West Coast. You have Highway 101, which goes from, I believe, the Mexican border all the way up to the Canadian border. And then you have I-5. And I-5 it's so busy. They get pounds over there weekly off traffic stops. And I know that's just a small fraction of what they're getting. The heroin problem here has gotten really bad in the last 4 years, probably. There was one or two people that were addicted to heroin, you know, a couple of years ago, and now it seems like everybody's on heroin. It's getting really bad around here, and that seems to be the drug of choice in that circle. So the pill problem has kind of dried up because heroin has replaced it. The doctors were pushing opiate pills and synthetic opiate pills for a long time, and then they got cracked down on, so then they stopped pushing the pills out to people, and then people had to find some way to supplement that. So heroin is cheaper, and it does a similar thing. So according to the local people that we deal with here, they have come across fentanyl-laced stuff, and they actually have the needle exchanges in California will give out Narcan, and they give out fentanyl testing strips. So they'll test their heroin before they use it, and if it's got fentanyl in it. It's such a deadly chemical. Our county commissioners are, you know, they were getting retired enough of it that we've actually got a canine program up and running now. We hadn't had a dog program since the 90s, I believe. And so now we have the dogs. That's shaking things up. People thought it was a rumor, and then and then we're stuffing the dog in their car on traffic stops and taking them to jail. And, you know, it's definitely been noticed that we're stepping our game up and trying to combat this.
Today, Detective Freeman continues to work on finding resources to continue ground, water, and aerial searches, hoping to find Max, as well as hoping that someone will finally come forward with information.
It's frustrating for us because I would like to be able to push harder or get resources that maybe I could get a hold of down there to help out. And we do try to interface with Gilmore County and offer, like, our dogs. We can use the dog. One of our dogs is a FEMA dog, so it's trained to track people in a building collapse or anything like that. So we've offered all those up, and they have their own dog teams down there. So it's just, it's frustrating. I'm 90% sure I know what happened. There's small variants in the stories from the people that I've debriefed, but people are talking, and we know who was involved, and I'm 90% sure I know who, what, when, where, and how. The why is what the variants are. The motives, like I said, that's just rotating. So it was, he was robbed for drugs. Well, we knew he didn't have any drugs. He was recently clean for a period of time. So then it was, well, he overdosed and they got scared. And then it's, well, he was flirting with this chick's boyfriend because Max was homosexual. And then her boyfriend punched him. And then it's, well, this guy, and you know, he got knocked unconscious and went to a seizure and died. And then it's, well, this guy's just a homophobe and he punched him and he went to a seizure and died, you know. So, like I said, we know who's involved. People are talking to us, and it's one of those things that's going to get, it's going to come to the light. It's just going to take a matter of someone's conscience getting to him.
You aren't sleeping, and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Curry County continues to work on this case, but Del Norte County, California handles the bulk of it, since that's where Max disappeared from. Fortunately, we were able to speak with the detective assigned to Max's case in that county. This is Detective Jaron Gill, who has played a huge role in the search for Max since the day he vanished. He told us how the investigation began.
Yeah, so he was reported by his family as a missing person to the Curry County Sheriff's Office. It was middle of March of 2018, shortly after St. Paddy's Day. And then they quickly were able to determine that Max was last seen in Del Norte County down in Smith River. And he was actually last seen at the Lucky Seven Casino. And after they were able to quickly determine that, they contacted us to assist in an investigation. So where we work, we're both very rural communities. that just happened to straddle the state line. To the north of north into Curry County, it's very rural. To the south into Donner County, it's very rural. So we work closely together. I actually have a cross deputization up there just because of our investigations. You know, crime doesn't necessarily pay attention to lines like that. So yeah, we do have to work close with each other in a lot of these bigger investigations. It just so happens that this investigation does have a lot of involved parties from the Oregon side. And generally, they are a little more familiar with some of these people that they contact on other unrelated issues day-to-day more often than we do. The family knew that Max was at the casino that night as well. Yeah, so that was one of the first things we did. When we have bigger cases, we work with Lucky Seven's name, the casino, and we work with their surveillance department, and we were able to look at a lot of footage from that night of what was going on and other people he was associated with.
We asked Detective Gill to share with us how missing persons cases are handled in their county, and he explained that they generally attempt to make contact with friends and family, and if the person isn't found, it's assigned to investigations. However, Max's case is considered different, and here's why.
This one's a little unique, as we don't hold it as a missing persons case. The Curry County Sheriff's Office holds the case as a missing persons case, and we have an open investigation into it because of foul play being suspected occurring in our jurisdiction. We don't believe it's voluntary. We do suspect foul play to be occurring. It began with the, like we mentioned earlier, about the surveillance with Lucky Seven Casino and basically establishing his timeline as much as we can leading up to his disappearance. That helped us out a lot in telling us who he showed up there with, who was associated with, why he was there, and his means of leaving. After that, this case, we've had a large amount of tips coming in that comes into the sheriff's office, goes to family, and forwarded to us that has led us to a lot of search areas, and we've also have completed search warrants for certain private properties on this case. And our search and rescue team, we have relied on throughout this case to help us with ground searches, and they have been deployed over several dozen times for different areas and ground searches, utilizing the volunteers and their cadaver dogs. At this time, there are some that we are still working active leads on those search areas that we haven't ruled out. So there's some that we don't want to publicize. I can tell you that, you know, we're a small area and people see us out a lot. They'll see our search and rescue team out searching in the Smiths River area often.
We discussed the surveillance video earlier in this episode, and I encourage you to watch it for yourself. Detective Gill has also watched it many times. He shared with us what his observations are.
He was approached by security staff, and this is something they normally do. If someone doesn't have ID on them, they ask them to leave. And that was the case for Max. He was asked by the security department, the security, to leave the grounds. After he was asked to leave the casino, he did hang around the parking lot for quite some time, up to about an hour. And he's on his phone and he's obviously communicating with people. And at one point he does meet up with Ledford at the front doors of the casino. They have a very brief conversation and then walk off to the parking lot. Ledford. Yeah. So he is seen coming back on camera about 15, 18 minutes later, arriving back to the casino on foot. And he spends a significant amount of time there. For the next couple hours.
As we ended our call, we asked Detective Gill to share what the day-to-day investigation looks like and who has been helpful in his work.
This case has been one of those that just, as we go on, we're adding one, two, three more names a day. People that are mentioned or someone that heard something and, you know, they heard it from somebody else, they heard it from somebody else. And, you know, just like anything, you got to work that information backwards and try to find the source of that information. And quickly, you know, we still to this day have a big whiteboard in our investigations room that is just filled with names of people connected or involved. Tanya has been amazing. And, you know, she has helped us so much on this case. She's so invested in it. and she's constantly, she's like the walking database herself of people that have given her tips and that have information, and she's just been, she's been working it on her own end and feeding us this information to help us out, and it's been very beneficial.
Since the time that Max was reported missing, the police in Del Norte, California have searched extensively for Max, using all of the resources available to them, including conducting searches of some pretty dangerous terrain. The police have received and followed up on many leads, and while they often seem to follow the same or similar pattern, they haven't led to solid answers that can be tracked. And while there may not be much physical evidence, there are plenty of rumors about what happened to Max, and they seem to get more and more bizarre. We asked Tanya what some of these rumors have entailed.
It's been rumored that he was tossed over the edge somewhere. We have several creeks and rivers. I mean, we live on the coast. There's a lot of water around here. But me and my mom are sitting like not very far away from where he disappeared and where I think he was killed. I mean, it's been rumored that he was moved, that they dug him up and then moved him. They actually just pulled another body out a few days ago that is being investigated as a murder here.
Suspicion still remains around Jason Ledford, the last person seen with Max. It's unclear what role he may have played in Max's disappearance, if any. Was he a witness to something, or could he be involved?
Me and my mom went and talked to him one night. He said Max was his friend. He loved it, you know. He said, oh, you know, I'm kind of like a dad to these kids. And he's like, I would never hurt him. But when he said he would never hurt him, he wouldn't look at me. And that bothers me. I personally don't think Ledford killed him. But I do think he knows more than he's saying, and or he knows enough. Now, whether or not he feels guilty or he's actually terrified, because that seems to be the general consensus of people, is they're horrified. The people involved are known big drug addicts, and people die here and go missing, and nobody really does anything about it. But it's like, this one isn't going away. When the rumors first started coming in, it was that he had overdosed and they panicked and hid his body. But as time has gone on, it has switched to somebody killed him. There was an altercation and it was over drugs and they killed him. I think he was killed, because I think that if it was an overdose, I think somebody would tell me where to find his body. But I think if there's physical evidence that it's not an overdose, they're not going to want somebody to find his body. This is a small town. I've been here on and off my whole life. My mom's been here since the early 70s. We know everybody. I'm a hairdresser. She was a bartender. We do talk to a lot of people. She used to work at the casino. My mom did. When it started coming out on Facebook, I would get random messages, a messenger saying, hey, I need to tell you something. You know, this is what I heard. And it was that Max overdosed and was buried on a certain property, which they served a search warrant, but we think he was moved when they realized the police weren't going away. We think they dug him up and moved him. It's been rumored that he was thrown in a well, and pretty much it's local people here that people started talking about it, and it's getting so much coverage and nobody wants to be mentioned. So everybody's afraid, you know, it's like, hey, so-and-so told my mom and she's afraid to tell you because they're going to kill her if anyone knows she said something type thing. They're like, so if you don't use my name, I'll tell you what I know. They're re-interviewing people. They're going over different interviews they've had. They're questioning new people. They're just like combing through it all and trying to pick it apart and see whose story doesn't actually match. Because it seems like there's a lot of people, there's a lot of names that have been brought up and multiple stories. And so they're following all of them. I mean, there's a couple main stories. One, he's in a well. Two, in the water somewhere, you know, somebody threw him over a cliff. And three, he was tossed into a pig farm. And it's like, unless it's the owner of the pigs, you're not going to toss a body into somebody else's pig farm in the hopes that they haven't eaten. That's ridiculous.
So what happened to Max Greenfield in the early morning hours of March 18th, 2018? Does the other man that Max was with, Jason, know more than he shared with the police? Why did he lie about not knowing Max, or saying that he wasn't even at the casino that night? Did he have something to do with Max's disappearance? Or did he witness something that he's too afraid to talk about? Is it possible that Max chose to walk away from his life? His family doesn't believe he could have gone this long without contacting them, since he relied on them so much. And the police don't think he walked away either. Why hasn't any trace of Max or his belongings been found? Could his disappearance be related to an overdose that someone decided to cover up? Or did Max meet with foul play? Possibly even a hate crime? Max's family and the detectives in charge of investigating his case are hopeful that someone will come forward with the answers they are desperately seeking. At the time of his disappearance, Max Greenfield was 25 years old. He was approximately 6 feet tall and weighed around 150 to 160 pounds. He has brown hair and green eyes. Max has a tattoo of a skeleton key on his left arm. He was last seen carrying a duffel bag that his family believes was full of art supplies. If you have any information about the disappearance of Max Greenfield, you can call the Del Norte, California Sheriff's Office at 707-464-4191. You can also call the Curry County, Oregon Sheriff's Office at 541-247-3242. Both departments will allow callers to remain anonymous. You can follow Max's story on social media at Finding Max Greenfield.
So for us, like I said, it's whenever we come into contact with the involved parties, people we believe that are involved in it, we just try to interview them and see if we can get some extra, you know, see if we can get any additional information. Any leads that we get, we run those down right away. I'm in pretty much constant communication with Tanya. She has my cell phone number, so we talk back and forth quite a bit. And anytime she runs in any new information, she lets me in on it.
Anyone, if they have any kind of information, could just call the sheriff's office, the Del Norte County Sheriff's Office, at the main line. And we have a practice where whoever takes the call will take the information and pass it on to me. And that main line number is 707-464-4191. And I can also be contacted directly, 707-465-2468. And either one of those can be anonymous, but we also have an anonymous tip line that someone can text their tips to. And if they text DNSOTIP to 847-411.
That brings us to the end of episode 204. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. I'll be taking next week off to celebrate the holidays, and the show will be back on December 30th, and I'll be covering a case from Missouri. Thanks for listening.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity, that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I understand that anybody who's paid attention to the media would have to come to the conclusion that I killed my wife.
Hi, my name is Zach Stewart Pontier. I'm one of the filmmakers behind The Jinx, and I'm excited to bring you the official Jinx podcast. We'll be revisiting all six episodes of Part 1 and watching along with Part 2 as it airs on Max, starting April 21st.
Bye-bye.
The official Jinx podcast. Listen on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.